are listening to the Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Highmark at RadioArian.com.
Everyone, this is your host of the Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm here today again, joined by my good friend and compatriot, Jason Augustus of 14 Sacred Words. So just to start everything off, Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Matt. Thanks for having me on again.
Of course. Well, so fantastic. Last time we checked in with you, you were actually sitting right next to me. We were able to do this, our previous interview, in the same room. But unfortunately, you've had to return to Weimar, Germany, in a sort of bizarro time warp. So just tell our listeners a little bit about what it's like to be home and the main differences you see before we get into the other topics we're covering today. Of the differences between kind of middle America, I mean, majority white, traditional America, and the big city that you're experiencing. I'm interested to know your comparisons now that you've been able to see both, spend time in both, and now that you're back behind enemy lines.
Well, I guess first I'd like to say that this is not home. This is just the place where I'm currently residing until I can return home, which is where I was when I was out in Indiana. This is, as you said, Weimar. Coming back here has taken its toll on me, not only mentally, but also physically. I've been getting nauseous more often, and my nerves have just been kind of a wreck. It's basically if you were to take somebody out of hell for a week and then put them right back in. That's kind of the state I'm in right now.
Well, you know, I can only laugh because it's actually such a depressing thing. And I get messages all the time from people that are in very similar situations. And I mean, really my suggestion, and this is why with the Traditionalist Worker Party, you know, I think one of our main objectives with creating, in a cell structure, I mean, obviously we've still got a hierarchy, but a cell structure of local chapters that have a community within them in which we can be able to build things together, you know, where the left is all about destroying, the multiculturalists are all about destroying. We're actually about building, and the possibility with you and other comrades coming here to the same area so we can do things like build a small community, be able to have party offices, and be able to get ingrained within a local community and be able to make positive changes. That's something that we probably couldn't do in New York City, but there's so many people that are kind of behind enemy lines and they don't know what to do, and that's where the biggest thing, I think, in the next couple of years for our party is going to be building these small communities for people to be able to say, look, if you don't know where to go, if you're tired of living in multicultural America, come home with a capital H, you know, get out of there and come and build something. So is that something that you would suggest? I mean, obviously you're going to be one of our first pioneers. We've got a few here already here in Southern Indiana, but we're going to be building from there. Is that what you'd suggest to people that are, say they're in New York or Los Angeles or Detroit or, there's not very many white people left in Detroit, but there's a few. Is that what you'd suggest to them with this mission of come home to a white area where we can build something, or should they just stay there and grind it out?
Well, I guess it really depends on the type of person you're talking to here. There's plenty of whites that are perfectly content with their own genocide here. They're in no shortage. So telling them to come to a place like Paoli and have them believe that it's home, that would be their hell.
All that organic food and Amish people, I tell you what.
Yeah, that's just, it's outside of their realm. So, no. But I mean, for any like-minded individual who has any kind of constructive outlook on where we should be going as a people and, how we should be presenting ourselves in this cause, then absolutely we should be forming communities.
Well, and it's just a way to be able to help one another, to be able to be there with one another, and to be able to, again, build something. It's the opposite of what the left wants. It's the opposite of globalism, which wants to break down ethnic identity, religious identity, cultural identity. We want to build something, and, we don't want to impose our worldview on anyone else. We just want to be left alone to be able to build up our own home and to be able to hopefully one day be independent and sovereign, just like people are asking for all around the world. and they're winning their independence. So we need our independence here, away from a corrupt Judeo establishment that has us locked as serfs on their land. We need to be able to have our own patch of dirt. But, you know, one of the ways I really wanted to focus a lot of our time today, because it's something especially that's hit you recently, is this discussion over Facebook. Facebook, of course, is catching a lot of flack because they are, you know, banning a lot of conservative pages. Their What's Trending News is just kind of a who's who of Salon.com and other left-wing media outlets to, you know, it's always anti-Trump. It's always anti-nationalist. It's always pro-immigrant, pro-gay, pro-transvestite, all these different things. And they're actually silencing conservatives. I was reading a thing today about how conservative pages, that some have millions of followers, but, you know, only a few hundred people, a few thousand people ever see the posts because they're conservative, they're anti-immigration usually, and Facebook just kind of puts them in the corner. So tell us a little bit about your thoughts about that, as to exactly why it's happening, and what recently happened to you with Facebook.
Well, they control not only the narrative, but all the means of communication that we have, whether it be Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter, wherever it is. They control what you see, when you see it, and they appear to think that shutting it down, so to speak, with a lot of these things, is going to in some way hinder our cause or stop us from doing what we're doing, as if we're not just going to crop up with another page and start this ridiculous cycle over and over again. I think the aim for them is to pretend we don't exist, and then eventually, you know, you tell a lie loud enough and long enough, it becomes true, but that is not the case. But I think that that's kind of the approach that they're taking with all this shut it down type of stuff.
Well, and they're doing it all the time. I mean, there's so many bans I've received on Facebook, and things we've gotten dinged for, very innocuous things, like on the Traditionalist Youth Network and Traditionalist Worker Party Facebook pages that aren't using any Third Reich symbols or fascist symbols or anything like that. We're not using racial slurs. We're simply saying things like, I think we got dinged for a post one time that said, start a victory garden and grow your own food. I mean, it's something that's so insane. The idea that there are liberal pages dedicated with millions of followers that are dedicated to grow your own food and be independent and self-sufficient. But when nationalists do that, that's called hate speech. Apparently tomatoes are hate speech. I think it just goes to show how much they hate us. I mean, can you explain a little bit on the psychology? Because, again, behind enemy lines and knowing that rich white liberal yuppies and Jews are, of course, the ones that pull the levers of control within our mass media and things like that. Of course, Zuckerberg, that's not an Anglo-Saxon name by any means. I don't think he's Scottish, or I don't think he's German. Yeah, we all know where he's from. But, you know, a question would be is, why are they so scared of us? I mean, why is it, you know, when you see things like George Soros fronts funneling tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars in some cases, into fighting quote-unquote racism and quote-unquote fascism and every other buzzword they like to throw out, when they're trying to silence us so hard, when our movement, compared to them, because of course they control the media, the school system, and all these different things, they've got so many more people they can throw onto the streets. Why are they scared of us?
Well, I think it's because they've been operating under this idea that you can buy literally everything, and it's been working out for them pretty well so far. But they've reached this tipping point in history where they're slowly realizing that there are certain things money can't buy, such as truth and nature. And that's what they're fighting right now. And they will not win that war. They cannot win that, not with all the shutting down and all the money in the universe.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, again, what we're talking about is natural and organic. I was actually reading an article a few days ago. It was Why Dogs Are Racist. And it was no joke. They did an entire study on, you know, why, for instance, when you've got white masters for the dogs, why, you know, pit bulls and German shepherds and stuff will growl at the black guy walking down the street, or, you know, the Hispanic mailman or things like that. And it was trying to figure out, why are dogs racist? And, you know, the way that makes sense to me, and I think to anyone, is to say that, you know, a dog, when it bonds with a family, is a part of that family, you know, and identifies with that family. And when there's people that are obviously of a different tribe, they view them suspiciously. That's natural, right? You know, babies naturally have an instinct to have more sympathy and to feel more comfortable. with the more people look like them, they're more comfortable. They have a tribal instinct. So, I mean, how do they, I mean, it's the same way, it's really funny to be able to see leftists where they say, you know, to conservatives, and I'm not a climate change denier by any means, you know, I think our environmental issues need to be taken very seriously, but, you know, they say that conservatives, you know, Republicans, are so stupid for ignoring climate change science, and then a conservative can point out, well, you're saying that someone with an X and Y chromosome is the opposite gender, so aren't you ignoring silence or science? And they just go like, "You're a racist, fascist bigot," you know?
Yeah.
Why did they? I mean, because everything they build themselves up on, this atheistic materialist society, why can they not be challenged? And also, why do they instantly abandon their positions? Because, like, we can disprove the idea that you are a different gender by looking at your DNA. We can disprove the fact that all races are the same by comparing just skeletal structure and genetic markers within people, which give different racial groups different attributes. That's just not even a question within science. The idea of IQ differences, that's not even a question if you objectively look at science. And for this, you know, this movement of the left that's so dedicated to science, why do you think they just abandon their positions over, you know, within a second, and then they flip to feelings? You know, they it seems like they don't actually stand for anything.
Well, I think oftentimes we give them a little bit more credit than they're due. The left hydra that they've created is basically just a whole bunch of false dichotomies all over the place. I mean, like, it's 100% hypocrisy, and you basically have to be nuts to accept it. And, you know, that's why they had to push this over time. You know, this isn't something that could have been swallowed overnight. You know, it's something that took a really, really long time for them to push, and to have us accept all of these things that really just don't make any kind of rational or practical sense. So I think the leaders at the head of all of this have no problem dropping all of that or dismissing it or throwing it out because they know it's disposable. They've created it to be disposable.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's things like, I always love having arguments. Even before I was a third positionist, I would always argue with people, just to be devil's advocate, when I was even in high school, and I'd have these stupid, you know, my fellow classmates be like, well, you know, communism is like a great system, and like fascism, like, you know, was bad for working people. And I would just, you know, be like, being relatively apolitical at the time, be like, well, the Soviet Union, within just a few years, had mass starvation with millions upon millions of people dying because they couldn't feed themselves, the economy went in the tanks, and everything fell apart. And the National Socialists ended unemployment, drove up wages, the standard of living, and everything for the German people. So aren't you wrong? And they would just go, well, you're a fascist apologist. You know, like, no, yeah. no amount of data can persuade a leftist. And, you know, that's where, when it comes to emotion, it's a very powerful thing, and it's not a wrong thing. You know, we can't be hyper-rational all the time because, you know, emotions are important. It's part of the human experience. We don't live in the movie Equilibrium where, you know, we all have to take a pill and we don't have any feelings. So, so you know, music is one of the best ways to be able to move people. I mean, the Irish Republican movement has lived on through song. You know, that's the way you're able to motivate people and convert people. It's what the left has done. I mean, that's why they bought out Hollywood and they bought out the recording industry, to be able to use emotion and stuff like that to work people's minds. So maybe just tell us a little bit about, with 14 Sacred Words, we've kind of touched on it before, but I think it's a really good topic, of what impact your music can have, especially on young white men and women.
Well, I don't really view 14 Sacred Words as anything. I mean, it can be, you know, an eye-opening tool for some, but I think for most, it's just for the people who kind of sense that something is wrong already, if not, you know, full-fledged nationalists or traditionalists like ourselves. You know, it can be eye-opening for the average person, but I don't think that that's its central function. I think the main thing is to genuinely just show people, the average person, that they're not alone in this, and to strengthen the resolve of people who've decided to stand with us.
Well, and that's such an important thing to do. And, you know, in this mission, as we're reaching so many different people, I mean, with our writings, with our music, we've even got some of our guys drawing cartoons and stuff now, the propaganda leaflets you've done, an amazing amount of stuff. So what is the enemy doing? You had a little bit of a rough time, I hear, with Facebook, talking about all this censorship of nationalist ideas. What happened with the 14 Sacred Words Facebook page?
Well, I was just, you know, I was flipping through my phone at work the other day, and I came across a little notification that says, your page has been unpublished. And, like, that was it. I was like, oh okay. why? And I was not given any explanation until I got home in front of my computer. And it said something to the effect of, although we respect the right of artists to criticize institutions and ideas and all these other things, we do take a firm stance against hate speech, and that includes, you know, the general lines of people of color, national origin. But the big thing that stood out, and I think what got me pinpointed, was religion. Since I don't use any racial slurs or anything like that, what I do attack is what people perceive to be a religion, the Jew. So in my appeal to that, I just clicked appeal, but should it have come down to it, I would have just questioned, why is my page in particular being targeted when you can go to facebook.com/deicide that openly advocates violence against Christians? They have a song called Kill the Christian, and they're not being bothered at all. And go to facebook.com/impaledNazarene. You'll find very similar things. Why is it that only me, a little guy, you know, I'm by no means as big as these other bands, being targeted when I am criticizing just a different religion here?
Well, exactly. And, you know, it hits on a very important thing where, you know, of course, Jews, for the Israeli rite of return, you don't have to show your bar mitzvah certificate or how often you've attended synagogue. The majority of Israeli Jews are non-religious. The Jewish state itself defines Judaism as a group of people, but of course they also have their satanic Talmudic faith. But they get special treatment. I don't think there's any question. And, you know, there's something deeper, and it's something that, you know, you and I off the air have been talking about for a while now, about the Jews are totally comfortable when it comes to things being anti-Christian. They have absolutely no problem with it. They love when people attack Christianity. They're being edgy. They're expressing themselves. But there's just something about the idea of Christians. I've even seen Christian ministries that are just opposed to homosexuality, who are even just opposed to abortion, the radical idea that a young child shouldn't be ripped apart and murdered for the convenience of the mother and the society to not live with consequences of sexual activity. And we murder our own children. But the idea that Christian ministries, for simply supporting a traditional biblical view of being opposed to homosexuality, supporting the right of the unborn to not be murdered, over 3,000 a day, and you just simply calling out a group of people that hates Christianity, that bombs churches in the Middle East, that harasses priests on a daily basis. I know several priests that have done work in Jerusalem and said that even IDF soldiers would spit on them and stuff like that, and hold them up at checkpoints so they couldn't go to church. This is a group of people that is opposed to every part of European identity and also Christianity, but the Jew hates us. They just pathologically hate us. They cannot help themselves. I mean, so do you think it really is that Jews just have, you know, to promote their agenda, that anything that is anti-Christian, that of course, that is anti-white, is allowed to stay? I mean, I've seen pages where they're talking about, we need to kill, we need to kill all the whites of New Black Panthers. Have videos on Facebook that I've seen about, we need to kill white babies and stuff like that. But if it's white, if it's pro-white or it's pro-Christian, it has to go. I mean, do you see that as just the Jews trying to have a defense mechanism?
Absolutely. This is, the Jews like to toe this little line between, are we a people or are we a religion? And they've been in that sort of arbitrary stage for a long time. How they've gotten away with it this long, I'm not entirely sure. You know, we have many people in our cause that are obviously not Christian. They're just pro-white, whether they be pagan or agnostic. And there even are some, you know, I would consider them very confused individuals that are atheists that are pro-white. But it can't be denied at all that the primary focus right now of the left is to attack Christianity. We don't see any of the scrutiny that they place on Christians placed on Islam. We do not see it placed on any branch of paganism. We don't see it placed anywhere else except on Christianity. And it's kind of fashionable to bash Christianity. They've made it fashionable to do that.
Exactly. You know, it's a really funny thing is I saw some tweets because Avalion, people have some questions and concerns somewhat about her and her YouTube channel. But she was calling out the Jews. She was saying, things, some truths about the Second World War and things like that. I definitely didn't agree with everything she said. But, you know, when people are calling out the enemy and awakening other people to this cause, I think that's a good thing. And, of course, her account on YouTube got taken down, and then her backup account also got taken down. And I was seeing some Twitter chatter that was like, hey, by the way, you took her down. Go check out this ISIS playlist. And I found dozens, absolutely dozens of ISIS YouTube accounts that have their propaganda videos, that have their music, that have all this propaganda to try and recruit young Muslims to go, blow up another building, to go and behead another soldier like Lee Rigby was done in England, to go and promote jihad against the West, or to come to Syria to commit jihad. And it's very, you got to think, why is it? Why can ISIS maintain YouTube channels and Twitter accounts, but to be a nationalist and simply say, I'm not, going to bow down. I'm not going to apologize for being white or for my culture, and my people have a right to exist. Bam, instantly you're taken down. But ISIS is allowed to have a YouTube account. I mean, it's absolute insanity that to me can only be defined through the lens of the Jews do not view, even groups like ISIS, they're willing to go 3,000 miles to attack us in California or our comrades in Europe, but they're not willing to go 50 miles into Israel. So the Jews don't view them as a threat, but anything that is a threat to Jewish power and Jewish control has to be destroyed, has to be shut down. So we're apparently, in the eyes of the Jews, we're more dangerous than ISIS. That's kind of a bizarre feeling, but kind of a good feeling, I guess.
Well, I suppose so. I don't know. I kind of view the ISIS deal and in kind of a different light. You can call it conspiracy theory or whatnot, but I believe that they know that Islam and European nations are not compatible at all. So they kind of just open the floodgates for these guys while we fight each other so they can be behind the scenes and continue to plant their little seeds of degeneracy within our society, because who's going to see a Jew when we're busy fighting the Muslims?
Right, exactly. It allows them to consolidate their influence and their control. I mean, just as they've worked, I mean, they used the United States to destabilize and remove Saddam Hussein from Iraq, Mubarak from Egypt. They've been trying to remove Assad now for half a decade. I mean, it's absolutely insane. But the Jews have no problem working with Muslims that work along with them, that will promote their interests, like Saudi Arabia, that exports, is the number one exporter of radical jihad around the entire world. It wasn't Iraq. It's not Syria. It's Saudi Arabia. But Israel and Saudi Arabia have a very cushy relationship. So they simply hate anything that resists their influence. And I agree with you. They're trying to have us fight one another. And I've got far more in common with like a Lebanese nationalist and Hezbollah than I do a Jew, of course, because, in Hezbollah, they're Arab National Socialists. They want to be able to have a sovereign homeland. They want to be able to protect their faith and their family and their folk, and they don't want to come here, where Europe is not being flooded with members of Bashar al-Assad's Syrian Arab Army or Hezbollah or Hamas or other groups like that. We're being flooded with these young men who the Jews and George Soros has already admitted that's what he's doing. He's funding these young men to come here to cause disunity, to have us fight one another, and this is what the Jew does with the multiculturalism here in the United States. I mean, you live in a war zone, essentially, because of forced multiculturalism.
That's generally what this is. I mean, the idea is that we don't have. I mean, that's what they come in with, is the idea that we as whites, European Americans, don't have an ethnic identity. Therefore, it makes sense that all of these third world immigrants have just as much of a right to the soil as we do. They have a right to basically everything, and at this point, including our lives. I just saw a video a while ago about some kid in some college who was making the argument for why white people don't deserve to live. And he was making it very seriously, and they had this poor little white kid in the corner that just didn't know, what the hell was going on, trying to explain why he has the right to live just because he's alive. and you know, how he wants to fight systemic racism with you. Like, you know, I can be a tool to help you. And the black kid is just like, oh, you want to help us? Then kill yourself. Like, he said that flat out. Just kill yourself. You don't have a right to be alive.
Oh, it's, I mean, it's just like I saw my alma mater, Towson University. They had a thing that made the rounds on Facebook with some black student doing a thing that, like, why white people are a plague upon this planet. And I was like, you know, for all those people that, the conservatives that, of course, sold us out when we created a white student union at Towson, they were like, well, why do you need that? And that's exactly the reason. We need advocacy groups because you've got people literally saying, I mean, I have pretty much never met a nationalist. And if I've ever met one that said something like this, it's usually when they're really angry over something or intoxicated or something. But I never hear nationalists talking about wanting to wipe out other racial groups off this planet or wanting to commit genocide. But you've got people in institutions supported by their professors, supported by this establishment, and given press time in the media to literally say, like, my 9-month-old son deserves to die. You know, your family deserves to die. Every white family has a duty, it's not even deserves, has a duty to die because we're a plague upon this planet. And if people don't think that there's anti-white feelings out there, then they need to get their heads examined. I don't see any privilege in being told by the establishment that they're going to kill us if we don't kill ourselves. I mean,
yeah, it's a really tough thing to swallow oftentimes, especially here, because they push white privilege very heavily here. And European Americans in New York City, at least the ones that live here, make up anywhere between 8% and 10% of the population. And the narrative that comes along with that is society was set up for you. All of this was built for you. It's all yours. And you're just there like, well, where the hell am I? You know? I don't see a whole lot of me.
Yeah, I don't think it was built for us. I think it was built by us.
Yeah, it was built by us, and now I'm looking around. I'm like, okay, well, all the Mexicans have all the blue collar jobs. All the Jews have the white collar jobs. Where the hell do I fit into all this?
Well, you just have to die white, man, because of white privilege and systemic racism, and you know, it's a duty to be able to. You know, it's like that one Jew professor that said that. Racism and whiteness are intricately linked, and the only way we can end racism is to end whiteness. And it's literally calling for a genocide. So, yeah, that's why I don't get on people all the time when they say, you know, we've got to take a battle to the Jew or things like that, because these people, like, we're not talking about a few fringe Jews. We're talking about established professors. We're talking about members of the Israeli parliament. We're talking about, think tank leaders are actually saying that we need to die, that we deserve to die, and they're going to kill us. I mean, it's getting down to a pretty serious situation. So, with your music, it's such an important thing to be able to, again, to kind of be a rallying cry of, no, we're not going to accept our demographic displacement. No, we're not going to accept our own genocide. No, we're not going to accept attacks on our cultures. Can you tell us a little bit about how your project's coming for, because of course, I'm actually sitting looking at my copy of the 14 Sacred Words EP that was released, Unbreakable. But can you tell us a little bit about how things are going with the production of your full-length album?
Things are going great. I'm closing in on finishing up the mix on a lot of the instrumental tracks. I just need to throw some more vocals on a few more things, master everything, and get it done. I wish I could say that I was taking this from a propagandist type of view, but my music is genuinely an outlet for what I have here, what I feel, and just trying to get it out in a productive medium. These aren't just things to try to solidify unity. These aren't just things that are being used as a tool. These are things that I'm feeling and that I have to express. I have to get them out in some way, or I'd lose my mind here if I wasn't able to do 14 Sacred Words.
Well, it's a part of you, and that's such an important thing that we need to be able to have, is have outlets. And, you know, to then be able to encourage, you know, with doing your music, to encourage other young white people to whatever their talents are, whether it's music, whether it's art, whether it's writing, whether it's poetry, even whether it's fiction writing, whatever people can do to be able to express themselves and be able to give a little piece of themselves to encourage one another, and we can have this shared experience. I mean, that's what a culture is, the shared experiences of an entire group of people. And that's why I think what you're doing is so important, because you are kind of on the front lines of this new, you know, youthful millennial generation, this political revolution of telling young whites they don't have to be quiet. They don't have to sit in the corner and beg to be an ally with people that want them dead. They can actually stand up for themselves, and their perspectives are important. Their feelings are important. We need to be able to create that sort of spirit in our people where they're willing to stand up and be honest with themselves and one another about who they are and that they're proud of who they are, and to be able to encourage that. So how's the release date looking? I know I apologize, actually, to all the fans of 14 Sacred Words, because Jason has been doing so much work for the party, and 14 Sacred Words is, of course, involved with the party as well, but it's kind of your own project, so I apologize for taking you away, trying to get everything done with the, with our paper and things like that. But
all your fault.
Yeah, it is all my... I've been told that so many times, you have no idea. but how are things looking for your release date, and where will people, again, be able to find your music, stay in touch with you, and to be able to support 14 Sacred Words?
I'm aiming for a release date, hopefully in August, but I'm giving myself until at least October, November, just to give myself some leeway. The labels that I've been working with, Label 56 here in the U.S., and Opus Records in Germany, have been kind enough to let me have that time and not put a specific date on it yet, but that's roughly around when it will be out. And you can check it out on 14sacredwords.com.
Excellent. Oh, and one last thing before we close out, because we've been talking about censorship today. Tell me why I'm looking at a on my CD, actually, right now. Why is there a sticker that says German edition? Tell us a little bit about that as our final thought for the day.
As you know, Germany has speech laws. There's certain words, there's certain things that you're not allowed to say. There's certain ideas you're not allowed to present. So it's not only certain words you can't say, certain ideas you can't present, certain things that you can't do. We still have the ability in the U.S. to say whatever we wish to say. It may come with consequence, but it's not imprisonment. So I had to put the German edition sticker on that to let the people in the U.S. know that, first of all, I haven't sold out. I'm not calling out the Jew anymore. I still am doing that. But also to draw awareness to the fact that our European brothers and sisters are, they're silenced. They're literally silenced. And, if we don't act soon, if we don't take up arms and really push forward with this, there's going to be a German edition sticker on everything.
Well, and that's the truth. It's actually, the hilarious thing is my final thought. I saw today that a poem against the leader of Turkey was banned by a German court for inciting racial hatred. It was funny because it referred to him as having sex with goats, but you can actually legally have sex with a goat in Germany. They got rid of a bunch of their bestiality laws, so I don't really know why saying that he does a perfectly legal activity in Angela Merkel's Germany was so horrible. But the guy who's gotten in trouble, he might go to prison for hate speech, is actually the guy that did that horrible Rammstein-esque video about we are Germans and we are polite and we are multicultural and we hate nationalism. And here, not like a month or two after he puts that out and gets all this praise for being a liberal crusader, he's now being crucified by Angela Merkel herself for simply condemning Turkey, the Turkish president. And it's really funny. Guess what, liberals? I'm sorry, but the Jew wants to use you, as Lenin would say, as a useful idiot, but they have no loyalty to you, and if you accidentally even cross the line, you're done.
Yes, you are absolutely disposable to them.
Yeah, leftists that we face are essentially Russian conscripts who have a machine gun to their back, and if they poke their heads up and are like, well, I don't really know if I agree with this, like the commissar will just,
Oh, God.
That's why what we're doing is so important, Jason. That's what you're doing is so important, to be able to give a voice to our people and to be able to, there's Bible smugglers in China, and there's nationalist propaganda smugglers in Europe now, because, like you said, with these laws, simply the idea of saying something, one of the reasons I was banned from England is because I said that England is for the English. And that was too radical for Theresa May, the Home Secretary, that we need to be basically nationalism smugglers to be able to support our comrades that are in occupied territory. Things are bad here in the United States, but they're really bad in Europe, because I've met so many guys that have been thrown in prison simply for saying that their ancestral land belongs to them and their descendants. So what you're doing is so important. So again, tip of the Stahlhelm to you and for all your work. And, I want to just thank you for joining me today. And is there any final little tidbits that they'd like to leave with our listeners?
They're losing. That's all I can say, is with all the shut it downs we've seen with just within the past week, all the with Elian, even little old me, and tons of other pages, and all the shutting down, they're doubling down because they are horrified. They see us rising.
I think that's the sort of spirit we need, and I agree with you. The left is losing control, and we are rising. We are on the march. And tomorrow does belong to us. So, again, thank you so much, Jason, for everything that you do. Thank you to my listeners for tuning in with us today. And if you haven't already, check out 14 Sacred Words. Get involved. Support this project, because this project is supporting you. And, of course, if you're also not a party comrade, join us at tradeworker.org. And you can be able to see the awesome layout work that Jason has done with the first issue of Action, our paper. So lots of content coming out, lots of stuff coming out. Jason, thank you again, and thank you, listeners. And I'll see you here tomorrow.
Tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heibach at RadioArea.com.